Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, July 30th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Keith Tracy is keeping an eye on Shelburne's Champions League qualifier against Qarabag in Baku. Don McLean joins us live from the Galway races. While in Gaelic Games, Aoife Murray reviews the All-Ireland Camogie semi-finals and Damien Lawler brings us all the latest GAA news stories. So if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Hello there. Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Welcome along to an hour of sport. Welcome along, Keith Tracy. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Shane. How are you?
Very well. Very well. Keeping an eye on the opening 45 minutes of Shelburne's Champions League qualifier in Baku against Qarabag, 3-0 down on aggregate. Heading into this one, it is now 4-0 on aggregate, 1-0 at half-time. Second half has just kicked off. How have the opening 45 minutes played out, Keith?
Shelburne have been competitive without really having a goal threat up front. They're playing Oda Becco and John Martin up front as a pair, and every now and then they've launched the ball into the box and John Martin has made forced contact and you're looking, where's Meepo? But he's not quite getting there. And look, at the Qarabag defenders in particular are keeping that back door shut. They know Shelburne don't really have a hope here if they defend in any way, shape or form. And yeah, Shelburne, as I say, they're being competitive in the middle of the pitch. They've no shots on target yet, but you know, I think that the opening half, they 23% of the ball in 29 degree heat. So it's a tall ask, and Qarabag have got to the boy line a couple of times. The pullbacks haven't quite been on the money, but in the 44th minute, when you're thinking just get to half time and it'll be a half decent result, they get to the end line and this time they decide just to fire it across the 6 yard box and hope for the best. And John Martin, to be fair to him, he's nice and brave, puts his head in the way, but it just skews off the side of his head into the back of the net. It came at him in the blink of an eye, so I don't really blame him. It's more unfortunate than anything, but Qarabag are starting to pick those holes now, and you do worry for Shelburne. But Joey O'Brien, the Shelburne manager, did make a couple of changes to the starting lineup, so it does sort of tell me that they've got their eye on another fixture.
Is the Sligo match on Saturday a more important fixture considering this is all pretty much a write-off?
Possibly, but these are Champions League games, and I know we can, you know, you can debate, oh well, it's early rounds, playoff rounds, knockout rounds, you know, it's still Champions League next to your name, so it's still a big game for Shelburne, so you don't want to write it off. They are the Irish champions as well, so you don't want to be going in there and saying we've been absolutely pumped by the Azerbaijani champions. As I say, it's 4-0 on aggregate now. Shelburne have been competitive but haven't quite had that goal threat that they did have in the first half. Obviously Paddy Barrett, Sean Gannon both hit the post in the first leg, but they've looked a little bit tootless so far.
No Paddy Barrett, no Sean Gannon, Evan Caffrey's on the bench, JJ Lunny, Sean Boyd. Were you surprised, Harry? Are you surprised with the amount of changes he made?
Not surprised, because I understand why Joey would do that. I understand with Shelburne obviously still trying to secure European football next season in that race, and obviously with more European fixtures to come after this Qarabag game, you totally understand it. But as I say, with a Champions League fixture, if I was one of those Shelburne lads, I think I'd be knocking on the door of Joey O'Brien saying, don't bother dropping me, I want to play. But I also think that if you're a Shelburne player, you're 3-0 down going away from home to play Qarabag, you know, a Paddy Barrett who has struggled with injuries at times this season, he's maybe thinking, do you know what, I live to fight another day. There are bigger games to come for Shelburne, but not a game you would put your hand up to miss.
Yeah, 1-0 after 49 minutes, as you mentioned, 4-0 on aggregate, and they have been competitive, a couple of half chances in the start of the second half. Is it important though that they don't, now the floodgates don't open for Shells, considering they have an important match away to Sligo on Saturday, and indeed then a Europa League qualifier against either Rijeka of Croatia or Ludogorets of Bulgaria during next week?
Yeah, I think you're right. Obviously, I don't think they're going to win this game, but one thing that can happen within this game is you take such a bad one that it lingers into the next couple of games. That's not what you would want. And as I say, it would be a real shame that I know they lost the first game in Tolka Park 3-0. There was two really good goals from a Qarabag point of view, and then all of a sudden Shelburne made that mistake towards the end and it's 3-0, and it puts the toy beyond doubt. The last thing you want to see here in a really competitive game, as you say, just coming up to the 50-minute mark, Shelburne Corner 1-0 down, but you don't want this to roll into 5-0, 6-0, because it hasn't had that type of feel to it. Although Carabag are, as I say, they're in possession much, much better. The way to pass into people, and they're in pre-season at the minute, so they do feel like they've a couple of gears to go. But, you know, as a player, you want to be testing yourself against the best, and there's always levels in this game, and Carabag at this level are, you know, a good bit better than Shelbourne. So there's learning to be done out there. It's not just, oh, we're going out here to get pumped. Have a look at how they're doing it. Have a look about the weight of pass, the timing of runs, and just the understanding of football at this level. So an awful lot still to be learned for Shelbourne, even in defeat.
Keith, let's talk about the romantic level of the League of Ireland. So Athlone Town in a Champions League qualifier against Cardiff City this evening. Athlone Town attempting to make a little bit of Champions League history this week as European football returns to the Midlands for the first time in 42 years. The last time Athlone hosted a competitive European fixture was back in September 1983 when they were beaten 3-2 by Standard Liège in the European Cup. Athlone Town women's manager Colin Fortune was at that game as a young boy, a nephew of legendary brothers Turlough, Michael and Padraig O'Connor. He was reared on stories of that famous game against Milan in 1975, a nil-all draw at a jammed St. Mel's Park. So Cardiff come to town to Lizzie Wullen this evening, 7:30 kickoff for that one, available to stream on LOI TV. And Colin Fortune was reminiscing about the glory days of St. Mel's.
Listen, I lived in St. Mel's Park. My family, we have steep history within the Athlone Town. My mother's an O'Connor. You know, Turlough was the manager. I would have been probably on his shoulder. But remember the excitement around the times. Can't never forget that. You know, Mel's Park back then was an unbelievable place. And my home, my mother's home place was in Sarsfield Square, the neighbouring estate. So I have massive memories from them times. Don't remember the game, but remember, I know a lot of people talking about it, and it's been brought up a lot recently because of this game. But, you know, it's an exciting time. It really is for us.
St. Mel's Park's probably before your time, Keith?
I think just before my time, yeah.
Just a couple of years, maybe. Just a couple of years. But how heartening is it to hear stories like that? And, like, Athlone Town have such a great history, and that famous Milan match, as I mentioned, and indeed Standard Liège, and to have Champions League football, albeit a qualifier for the Women's Champions League, coming back to Athlone, it's a brilliant story.
That's an absolutely brilliant story. As you say, 42 years since European football has been there. It's excellent. And it's these sort of romantic things when you hear the Athlone being named in the Champions League. Brett, I know it's still the qualifying rounds, but it's just brilliant to be able to hear that, especially about women's football. And look, Cardiff are in their pre-season as well. I do think Athlone will be that little bit sharper over the ground, and I do think Athlone have a really good chance. Athlone have had a great start to the season. They played 13, won 10 and drew 3, so unbeaten this season. They've only conceded the 4 goals in that time and scored 32, and the likes of Kelly Brady, Madison Gibson, they've got so many threats that I give them a great chance. But Cardiff know what they're doing. They've obviously won their league the last 3 times in a row, done the double last season winning the Welsh Cup, so Cardiff know exactly what they're doing as well. But like I say, I've my fingers crossed for Athlone. I have a good feeling they could get over the line there.
If Athlone prevail tonight, they'll host Croatian champions Agram in Saturday's round one final. Win that one and Athlone would become the first Irish side since Piemont United in 2011 to progress to round two of the Women's Champions League qualifiers, where they could potentially meet the likes of Manchester United and Inter Milan. So a massive opportunity for the club.
It is a massive opportunity, but as the Athlone players should just stay really, really grounded, just concentrate on this Cardiff fixture, because it's so easy as a human being for your mind to start wandering, and the glitz and glam of a Manchester United all of a sudden can start weighing you down. That's a million mile down the road. These Athlone women need to just concentrate on Cardiff. That's the first hurdle in front of them and the most important.
I mentioned that Milan match and going back. Is this what League of Ireland teams still need to do, or have we developed, Keith Tracy? You know, this is Google Translate, I must admit. But nil-all, the Milan keeper actually saved a penalty in that one. Now, Athlone did lose 3-0 in the San Siro and in the return leg. But for the referee, everything was regular. Replaced in the second half, Tato Sabadini, the Milan striker, did not mince words. "Sorry, I don't know how to play rugby." Agile, the Irish Nerazzurri found a real bulwark in Albertosi, the goalkeeper, at the end of the game, which ended nil-all. The Rossoneri coach Giovanni Trapattoni did not send him to the locker room. Competitiveness? No. Pure violence and prohibitive environmental conditions, said Trapattoni. Increased the dose, speaking of a dangerous game. Are we past those? Or is that what we want? Do we want these overseas teams coming here with perhaps a higher skill level to bring them down to that level?
Well, I don't think there's a blanket approach. I think if you're the better footballer footballing team or you feel you're a better footballing team, then go out and prove that. But if the team coming to town or the team you're going to play against is generally a better footballing team than you, then you've got to find a way to beat them. And
you love that, the dark arts, Keith
Tracy. That sort of stuff is music to my ears. I played in a Sam Allardyce team and I can't remember what team we were playing, but this is a Premier League game, and the opposition manager we were playing against had basically said that Sam Allardyce's Blackburn team is a basketball team, and he put it up and put it all over the dressing room, and I think it might have been Manchester United, but I'm not quite sure, and we ended up beating them in the end. But it's those little things. Oh, is that
Kerr McEnroy not scored? Kerr McEnroy from just outside the 6 yard box crossed in. Great save. Well, I say great save, but he has to score.
Yeah, it was straight at him. It was really good. I just caught it out the corner of my eye. I think it's Wilson gets to the byline and pulls it back to Kerr McEnroy in and around the penalty spot. He gets good connection on it, but it's straight at the Carabao goalkeeper. You would think a yard either side, and Shelbourne have equalised on the day. And I think it's Wilson there. It's just for a leg,
James
which
Norris.
Is just for
James
one
Norris, the left wing back that with Norris done well, won it back ahead of Odebeke, and oh, he's got to score that, Keith.
Yeah, he has. Anywhere else in the goal, and he's got a great chance, Kerr McEnroy. He's probably just taking good contact, and I've scored here. Makes it a little bit nonchalant. It's straight at the goalkeeper. But it's got to, you know, these type of things. Shelbourne, as I say, they've been really competitive. They're starting to get those shots on target now. And this is exactly what we want, although they're out of the toy, essentially.
Scoring a goal would be huge, even for confidence levels.
It would, yeah. This is, like I say, this is a Champions League game, and you'll be able to walk around saying, well, I scored a Champions League goal as a Shelbourne player. Not many people can say that. So, yeah, just to be able to compete at this level and feel like you haven't been outclassed. I know people will point to the scoreline, but generally, it has been a competitive game. So, go in there. Go and fill your boots. Go and get a reward from it.
Oh, a big 35 minutes to come. You were reminiscing, sorry, about your basketball team, the Blackburn Rovers team against United, and using that as motivation, was it?
Yeah, of course. I think you always should. And look, if a team, one thing that always grated on me, and I had it in certain teams that I played for, especially the Burnley team under Eddie Howe, that teams would come into the dressing room and they thought that was a lovely game of football. I enjoyed that. And you thought, you shouldn't be enjoying anything when you come to our team, and you know, to make it horrible, to make people say stuff like that. And you know, I've heard Mourinho give out about Allardyce, and Allardyce saying stuff like he's gone mad because I out-tacticked them. You know,
yeah, but did Sam not love that?
Sam loved it, but I use it as a motivation. You know, how many of these elite players think their game plan is so intricate, get the ball down neat and nice and tidy? Well, I tell you what, I'll just run through brick walls and make it horrible, and we'll go on that, and we'll see how
you
much you actually want
it.
I wasn't offended by it because I always thought, well, I have a little bit in the locker as well, and when I get in a 1v1 situation with you, I'll show you that I'm not all running and I'm not all blood, sweat, tears and thunder. There's a little bit of talent in there as well. So I was always told to express myself, but a non-negotiable was your work rate against these bigger teams. And when you hear managers coming out and saying stuff like that Giovanni Trapattoni has, it's absolute music to my ears.
Yeah, I don't have the quotes in front of me, but to paraphrase Katie Taylor, who had a motivational message for the Lions rugby team, that it's okay, you can have all the skill in the world as well, but you have to be willing to go to the well. You have to be willing to put your body on the line.
One thing that was always said to me was hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard, and that's always the way it would be. You need to be able to work hard. If talent works hard, it's an extremely difficult thing to be able to overcome.
So Shelburne won down on the night 4-0 on aggregate in Baku against Carabag. Pats won up. They are away in Estonia tomorrow night. They made hard work of the first leg. Will tomorrow be more of the same, or be a bit more smooth sailing, do you feel?
Hopefully a little bit more smooth sailing. Having a look at what Caldew had to offer, even I know they ended up with 9 men on the night. Pats, they're making chance after chance, quite similar to their League of Ireland form, and making chance after chance, not quite being as ruthless as they should be. And as that game started to wear on in Inchicore, you're thinking, oh God, Pats aren't going to get the winner here tonight. When Caldew got the first man sent off, you're thinking, okay, now you've got about, I think it was 25, nearly 30 minutes to go and open the door. They really did struggle. Jake Mulroney then goes down the right wing with his pace, and they really did struggle, Caldew, to do anything about it. And then the left back picks up a second red card on the night, so they're down to 9 men. And then all of a sudden, Conor Carty makes this brilliantly timed run through. He hits a shot on the angle that really doesn't have all that much venom in it, but the Caldew goalkeeper spills it, and Chris Forrester is the one. He's only just on the pitch about 10 minutes. He's onto it in a flash, and one of the Caldew centre-half throws himself on the ground to try and block it, but he just rolled. He stood over the ball really nonchalantly. And any League of Ireland fan, you will know, Shane, Chris Forrester is absolutely full of composure. And if anybody wants to know what the word composure means, just have a look at how Chris Forrester finished that that because it was really brilliant. But all in all, weighing it all up, having a look at what Caldew had to offer with 11 men, I still think Shane Patch should have enough to get past that. And they're a half-decent group, but at this level, if you're looking at a team and at that strength, I think Pats should have enough.
Okay, just keep an eye on this Carbag Shelburne match now. It's becoming a bit more open. Shelburne about to make a triple change. Sean Boyd, JJ Lunny and Harry Wood look like they're about to come on the sideline at the moment. What Shelburne don't want here is this game to open up now and Carbag to string a few passes together. They've been cut open a couple of times. Wessel Spiel making his Shelburne debut, signed on loan a couple of weeks ago, had to pull off a good save down low to his left as well. So they need to be very dogged and rigid here.
They do. They just need to keep Carabao going around them, but it's a lot easier said than done, and it's 4-0. There's only 60 minutes gone. Carabao don't seem too interested at opening Shelburne up time after time. There is periods of just long possession. As you say, in the heat, it can really mentally drain you. But the 5-3-2 that Shelburne are playing at times is dropping into a 5-4-1. So it's just about keeping the mental strength, the physical output up high. But they are getting deeper and deeper, Shane. And I do think it will get worse before it gets any better for Shelburne. But as I say, at this level, they have been they've been competitive and haven't embarrassed themselves, even if the scoreline at the end of this might suggest so.
Okay, as I mentioned, Shelburne about to make a triple change, 62 minutes on the clock. You're going to keep an eye on that one first, Keaton. We'll chat to you a little bit later. Just some news headlines elsewhere, keeping you up to date with the World Aquatic Championships in Singapore. Daniel Whiffen has missed out on a medal in the men's 800 metre freestyle at the World Aquatic Championships after an 8th place finish in the final, while Ellen Walsh has qualified for the final at the women's 200 metre butterfly by lowering her own national record. Olympic champion Whiffen, who was defending the world title he won in Doha last year, is recovering from appendicitis and said his stomach felt like it was in pieces halfway through the final. He will return to race in the 1500 metres freestyle on Saturday. Ellen Walsh was the final Irish swimmer in action today and qualified as 4th fastest overall for tomorrow's women's 200 metre butterfly final with a new national record. The 23-year-old Temple Oak swimmer finished 3rd in her semi-final heat in a time of 2 minutes 7.48 seconds. Earlier, Danielle Hill missed out on a place in the final of the women's 50 metre backstroke after finishing 12th fastest overall in the semi-finals. Evan Bailey missed out on a place in the 100 metre freestyle semi-finals but came close to his personal best in finishing in a time of 49.52 on the way to second place finish in his heat. It is the Limerick swimmers' final individual event of the championships. And just to note, France's Leon Marchand, who won 4 gold medals and a bronze on home soil at the Paris Olympics, set a new world record in the semi-final of the men's 200 metre individual medley. We are crossing live to Don McLean with the latest from the Galway races after the break. Stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
RTE 2FM. Game On. Racing.
Now, Don McLean joins us to chat racing. Not long to go now, just over 17 minutes until today's feature, the Galway Plate at the Galway Races. However, Don McLean, what else has been happening today?
Hiya, Shane. Yeah, we've had 3 races so far. One went to script, one kind of semi to script, and the other didn't go to script at all. According to the market, the first race was won by Hip Hop de Loire, Willie Mullins and Paul Tannen teaming up with this fella. He ran here last year when he finished second behind a stable companion, and he was really impressive when he got out in front early. His jumping was very, very good. He's 8 years old now, but this is only his second run over hurdles, but he saw his trip really well. He's in the Ebor at York back on the flat in a couple of weeks' time. He's favourite for that now. He was favourite. He's been hardened in at the top of the market for that, so he'll be very interesting. He ran in the race last year, actually, in the Ebor. He finished 5th. He didn't have a whole lot of luck in running, so he'll be a big player in the Ebor now. Next month in about 3 weeks' time. Then the second race went to Balcauda for Declan Queeley, and ridden by Declan Queeley, he gave him a fine ride. He was in behind early on, but he made his way through his field on the outside and he stayed on really well. Declan Queeley got a really good kick out of it. He got in as a reserve, actually, Balcauda. He was sent off 7-1 shot, just got the better of High Court Cave. And then our last race, the Mayor's Handicap Hurdle, that went to Cleopatra's Needle, who was a big prize. I think she was 22-1 in the end for trainer Harry Rogers and Paddy O'Brien. Paddy O'Brien, he's a young rider on the up, Shane. He gave her a super ride, had her in behind, around the inside. He got a lovely gap on the inside, and she quickened up really smartly and ran out a good winner from Billy Pochette, with the favourite in franchise running a good race to finish 3rd. So 3 down and 4 more to go.
Okay, you mentioned a couple of races not going to script. Well, the Sussex Stakes at Goodwood certainly did not go to script. A massive shock there, Don.
Yeah, a kind of a crazy result, really, Shane. Just shows you what can happen. Horse racing, Kirat, the winner. He was 150-1. He was actually put into the race. He's owned like Field of Gold by Judmont. He was put into the race to make the pace. for Field of Gold. Field of Gold was sent off a long odds on favourite. He was fully expected to go and win it. He's the one of the outstanding horses of the season, but it just didn't happen. Kirat had a nice break on his rivals. The pace wasn't that fast, and Kirat was able to have a break on the main bunch of the field from early, and he quickened up well. Rosalion came at him, Only Matisse came at him, and they just couldn't get him. Rosalion was a little bit unlucky. He was the one who made the greatest inroads from the back or from the main pack of the field to get to within a neck of Kirat by the time they got to the winning line. But Field of Gold, I think anyway, Shane, he probably underperformed. Like, he's got the beating of Only Matisse. He probably has he's a higher rating than Rosalion, so you would have expected him to, if, you know, given the way the race developed, they all raced around about the same position, and you would have expected him to pick up and confirm places with Only Matisse from Ascot. But yeah, just probably had an off day. Maybe the track didn't suit him. But yeah, all the spoils go to Kirat and Rafe Beckett and Richard Kingscott.
Okay, less than 15 minutes ago now until today's feature, the Galway Plate. Now, I know we touched on it yesterday. Don Nürburgring, the favourite, bidding to become the first horse since Anzar to win the Plate and indeed the Hurdle. Can anyone challenge Don?
Oh yeah, it's a wide open race, Shane. Nürburgring has actually been usurped at the top of the market by Down Memory Lane for Gordon Elliott and JP McManus. It's Mark Walsh rides Down Memory Lane. He's a lightly raced horse. He's only had four runs over fences and he's been really well supported. We haven't seen him since he ran in the Willowworm Gold Cup at Fairy House back in April, but he could be well handicapped on a mark of 145. Nürburgring, we mentioned, he's racing off a mark of 146. He's a lower mark over fences now than he is over hurdles. And his run at Killarney the last day was only his fifth run over fences. It was a really good run. He jumped very well. He just made a mistake at the second last, but apart from that, his jumping was exemplary. And he should appreciate the step up and trip as well from 2 miles on a furlong to 2 miles 6.5 today. He's trained by Joseph O'Brien, will be ridden by JJ Seven, owned by Bronson Racing. And the company sergeant has a big chance as well for Gavin Cromwell and Conor Stone Walsh. And I think Jazzy Matty could run a big race. He's about a 14-1 or a 16-1 shot, Shane, for Kian Collins, very good young trainer on the up. Harry Cobden rides him. He won the Grand Annual at Cheltenham over 2 miles and a furlong. He has to prove his stamina for 2 miles and 6.5 furlongs. But he's bred for it. He's a half-brother to Delta Work, actually, who was a top-class stayer. And if he stays the trip, Jazzy Matty, then, yeah, he could go well maybe each way at a bit of a price.
OK, great stuff, Don. We will check back in with you a little bit later when we know who wins today's Galway Plate. As I mentioned, 6:40, that one goes to post. Before we take a break, Keith Tracy, there's been a penalty in Baku and Wessel Spiel on his Shelburne debut is making himself a bit of a hero.
Yeah, he's made a really good save there, Spiel. It's not the best penalty in the world, but he gets down really well and It's not the most vicious of penalties. He saves it and actually spills it. One of the Carabag players is the force to get there, but he just bolt-holes it and it goes straight over the bar. And initially, I haven't seen too many replays just yet, but it did seem like a harsh one on Ledwich. His arm is up in an unnatural position, but I do think if his arm is not there, it's going to hit him in the head anyway. But VAR has obviously had a look and they agreed with the referee that it is an on-field penalty.
So close as well.
I thought it was really, really harsh. Look, I'm sure Carabag will be sitting there thinking it doesn't really matter in hindsight, but brilliant save, and it's something that will give Spiel an awful lot of confidence moving forward.
Very much so. Judging by the replays, it might have been a bit harsh awarding the penalty, but I think Spiel might have been off his line before the ball was taken. Inches. Yeah, inches
I think if you pause 90% of penalties at the moment of impact, most goalkeepers are just off the line. It's about how much leeway you're going to give. So I wouldn't be looking at it too much through a fine tooth comb, but Carabag with 20 minutes to go, seem like they're in the mood for a few more.
Yeah, triple sub now coming up for Carabag. Shelburne do have a free kick. Medina booked for a fell on Sean Boyd. So 70 minutes played. Carabag 1, Shelburne 0, 4-0 on aggregate in that one now. So Shelburne making good account for themselves so far. Okay, more from Keith Tracy and more football a little bit later on, but we are turning our attention to Gaelic games. Aoife Murray and Damien Lawler will be with us after this short break.
Game on. Gaelic football.
Now, Damien Lawler joins us to chat through all the latest Gaelic Games news. One football final done and dusted, one to come this week. We will be previewing that in detail on Friday's show with Nadine Doherty. We usually do our latest football slot of a Wednesday, but given the magnitude of the match coming up this weekend, we've pushed that until Friday, so do tune in for that one. Damien, given the disappointment from the last couple of years from a Kerry perspective, this must be one of the sweetest All-Ireland victories. But is there any word on whether or not Jack O'Connor will remain in charge?
Yeah, well, there's no official word yet, Shane, but I'll be honest with you. I'll be absolutely amazed if he goes anywhere. As far as I'm concerned, I'd say Jack will stay. I could be wrong, but my information is that he'll stay. My information was that he'd stay after the final whistle as well, by the way. So look, I suppose his utterances were there and the speculation was there after that. But no, I think Jack's after getting his fifth All-Ireland. I think he's after kind of building a new team on the hoof. It's a new backroom team. Another All-Ireland, he'll be level with Jim Gavin. Six All-Ireland titles as a manager. Mikko has eight. So I'd say there's an awful lot to play for still. And, you know, my own feeling, and it's my information that I received as well, is that he'd be staying put, you know. But, it certainly was a sweet one for him and Kerry to win the year Gaelic football was revolutionised, I guess, with the FRC rules that, you know, that they would feel themselves that they were the power, the football kicking team and all that. But, look, as regards the FRC, Shane, I know you want to have a chat about that too. An awful lot has improved this year. It's been a great, great year for Gaelic football. But now I think the FRC will tidy up the last bits and pieces before they go any further with their putting their recommendations into permanent form.
Yeah, are there any specific tweaks that might be looked at into before these proposed rule changes are ratified, or even any additional new changes, perhaps?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd have my own theory on that, Shane. Like, I think we had 481 hand passes there last Sunday, and I mean, that's probably similar, if not more, than what we had before the FRC rules came into play. There's still a huge over-reliance on hand passing, and the ratio for hand pass to kick pass this year was 5.5-1. It was 3.4-1 last year. So that's a surprise to me. So I still would be up for a limit on consecutive hand passing. That's my own opinion. It's unlikely to happen. With the FRC themselves, there's a definite push for 4 points for a goal to give some distance between the two-pointer and the worth of a goal. So there's a final sandbox match tonight in Abbottstown. And I think the four-point goal has been trialled there. I expect that could come back into contention. Also could come back into contention is if you bring the ball forward from your halfway line, that you're not allowed to go back. I think the reference this year's Leinster football final as a kind of a flag to that. So say we're not over the line yet, Shane, in terms of the full FRC proposals becoming permanent. You might have a look at the hand passing. You might have a look at the going back over your halfway line. And you might also have a look at the 4 points for a goal. I think what will happen now is the final sandbox game will take place tonight in Abbottstown, and then a report will be going off to Central Council, and then you'll have a special Congress then around October time that will put all the rules into place for 2026 on a permanent basis. But I still feel they can be revisited every couple of years as well.
What's the general consensus on the rule changes? Would I be right in saying it seems a lot more positive after the Championship than it was after the league?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel that, Shane, it needed a bit of time to settle in as well. It probably needs a few seasons to bed in completely. I think it's positive. The solo and go is the undoubted winner by far. No doubt about that. That hit the ground running, if you'll excuse the pun, hit the ground running right from the start. I think with the Allianz League, let's be honest about it, there was, up to my mind, three or four tweaks made during the course of that competition, right until maybe the penultimate rounds, the final rounds of the league. So there was continuous tweaking on the hoof there. But to be fair to the FRC, they saw something that wasn't working. They shifted it straight away. Championship then, it really got a chance to bed in. There was obviously consternation once or twice over the Hooters system. But I think it largely settled down after that. But let's not kid ourselves. You do have long periods of time whereby the ball is still, you know, being squared laterally with teams. Kerry had 100 seconds of possession there before the halftime Hooter last week. But the flip side of that is, while those 100 seconds were hard to endure, it was up to Donegal to come out and break that movement down. And when Kerry went to execute the final score before the Hooter, they were absolutely clinical, with Clifford only touching the ball like for 1 second before he flipped it over the bar. So overall, the rules are completely positive. I think you still have a way to go into maybe the hand pass. You know, that is something for me. And I think you will see the 4 point goal potentially coming in. But apart from that, it's changed the face of the game. Crowds are coming back as well, and it's been a great season, I think, for
first campaign in charge.
Some news from out west. Roscommon's Donie Smith has announced his retirement from inter-county football. 32 years of age, 133 appearances for Roscommon after his debut in the 2012 Championship. Two Connacht titles as well as four Division 2 crowns. Well, former Sligo players Desi Sloan and Eamon O'Hara have been appointed as joint managers of the county senior football squad on a three-year term. How much does that appointment change an approach from the 5 years under Tony McEntee?
Yeah, look, a really good question. Conn O'Mara is there as well, and the three of them would be really embedded in the Sligo club scene over the last few years. And to answer your question, I think the last 5 years have been really, really strong for Sligo underage. They've had a lot of success, and I think now the job of Eamon and Desi and Conn and the lads is to streamline a pathway for those young players to come into the senior setup over the next 3 years or so. And obviously, conditioning and S&C are the words I'd use are the most important because the skill levels are there, but not everybody would be able to make a step up to senior level at the same time from the underage squads. Certain people will because of their physicality and their conditioning, but others will need a kind of a pathway to do it. And I think the right people are in place now, and the under-20 management is in place as well. O'Hara, you know, well used. He was a co-manager with Tour de Strand, five county titles there. Desi Slime was involved with Eastkey, would have been involved in the county under-20s as well. They would have won a Connacht title. Eastkey won an All-Ireland Junior under him. And Connemara, very, very successful as well. So these guys know the scene inside out. There's a nice mixture of experience already there, but no doubt in my mind that by the end of their term, they'll have wanted a massive influx of youth and, I suppose, maybe winning mentality into that team as well. Because to me, they should have pushed a little bit harder for a Charlton Cup title over the last couple of seasons. And I mean that as with all due respect, because McEntee did a fine job with them, had them up to a really high level. And I actually thought they were Charlton Cup material. But now there is an influx of youth coming. And I suppose the principal job now, if you're being realistic about it, is to get through as many of those kids as you possibly can in a kind of an efficient manner.
Just before I do let you go, I did mention we will be previewing the ladies' football final in detail on Friday show with Nadine Doherty. But Dublin against Meath, who do you fancy, Damien?
Oh, what a tough one to ask me. I think I fancy Dublin. You know what? I see. I'm very, very wary in that. Like when Eamon Murray was in charge, I tipped Dublin to win that as well. But look, at these two teams are meeting again in the senior final. It's going to be part of an All Ireland triple header. I just think that there's a couple of Meath players, you know, could be going to Australia after the game as well. I think you rule out Meath at your peril. You know, they've had an open day draw against Armagh. They did a 3-point win away to Kildare. But Dublin have been imperious the whole way. They drew to Waterford, but they thumped Leitrim. Meath by Tipperary in the quarterfinals. Dublin had a good day out against Cork. It's so hard to know because Meath pulled the shock off in the semi-final then against Kerry, and Dublin, it took extra time to see off Galway. And I suppose with Carl Leroux and Kate Sullivan on the Dublin side of things, I'm going to plump for them marginally, but I think we're in for an unbelievable game there, Shane. I really do. I can't wait for it. I think the form lines are really rich between both teams. And as I mentioned, you know, they met recently there, the Leinster final. Dublin came out 2-13-12, so Meath have lots to aim for in terms of retribution there. I expect a really close game, but maybe Dublin to hang on by a point or two.
Okay, 4:15 throw in on Sunday in Croke Park for that one. Great stuff, Damien. Thanks for that. With the split season now, of course, attention returns to the club. So we'll let you go because I believe you're in championship action tonight. On the sideline, I assume, not talking out, Damien.
Well, I'll be watching Killer One take on Bursaleen in North Tip semi-final anyway, Shane. And whatever role is there, it could be supporter. We'll cheer out the lads to the very end. But there's no break. It's a quick turnaround now, and that's the way it is.
Okay, Damien Lawler, great stuff as always.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, Keith Tracy is still with us. Just to update you on the hockey, the third and final Euro Hockey Championship 2 pool match for the Irish men's hockey team. At halftime, it is Ireland 4, Portugal 0. And with 10 minutes left in Baku, it is Qarabag 1, Shelburne 0, 4-0 on aggregate. But Shell's still pushing, Keith, it's fair to say.
Yeah, look, I think they know the game is beyond them, but they're still pushing. They're still having a right go. Sean Boyd is just giving a free kick away for being a little bit over aggressive with a ball in the air. Not the first time.
Not very like Sean Boyd.
not the first time we'll say that. And to be fair, they're putting a really high press on Qarabag. They know the game is beyond them. They're taking a couple of liberties here or there. So it'd be brilliant if Shelbourne could nick the ball and get that little reward and just feel start to feel more and more comfortable. We speak about, you know, building blocks in football. Scoring a goal on a night like this would be a building block. So it would be something for Shelbourne to look back on if they could do it. But on the flip side of that, Shane, it does also look like that if Carabag do feel like going up a level, they could do that at any given time. But at the minute, not too bad from Shelbourne.
Okay, 82 minutes played. Carabag 1, Shelbourne 0. You touched on Pats earlier. I'll get your thoughts on Shamrock Rovers a little bit later on.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, Aoife Murray is with us to review the All-Ireland Camogie semi-finals. We now know the makeup of the final is going to be Cork and Galway, a repeat of last year's final and indeed the year before's semi-final. Let us begin with the Galway-Tipperary match. So a brilliant goal in the 39th minute by Niamh Mallon was the key score as Galway returned to the All-Ireland Senior Camogie final with a deserved victory over Tipperary, coming out on top by 118 to 111. Galway prevailed, Aoife, but they certainly didn't have it all their own way.
No, they didn't. Now, it was probably a little bit of a stop-start game in that first half. We never really got an opportunity for kind of that free-flowing game. In many ways, halftime probably coming at the wrong time for Tipperary, getting themselves back into the game. I thought they worked really hard in that first half to get themselves back in after what was an extremely slow start. And I think if there was any lesson to Cork in the final is, you know, don't give that start to Galway. So I think it was disappointing in many ways that we probably didn't get to see the best of both teams, but definitely the right team prevailed.
When you look at the full-back line from Galway, Dervla Higgins, Sean Healy, Roisin Black, such a formidable defence that proved and provided the platform for the Triumph, which has been the case for a lot of the Championship, building from the back. I mean, they've only got two goals conceded all Championship, which is remarkable.
Yeah, and look, in fairness, look, I think I've said it a number of times on this show, for me, probably one of the most consistent defenders over the past 8+ years has been Dervla Higgins, in my own opinion. And I know I probably would have a bit more of a defending eye to it, but to me, she's consistently year in, Championship, etc. I think she's probably been one of the most consistent defenders. I'd almost compare it to the likes of, I suppose, the consistency that the likes of even Pamela Mackey would provide Cork with. And to me, again, last Saturday, she was one of those women where you, it was completely and utterly dependent. And I think the likes of Healy and Black thing feed off of that. I thought Shauna Healy was probably one of our best performances of the Championship, and it's really great to see her back at that level. But certainly as a full back line, it to me was probably one of the defensive lines of the Championship so far this year.
Yeah, an outstanding block by Dervla Higgins late on to deny Jean Kelly goal. That might have made it a bit of a nervy ending. Then you look at someone like Ailish O'Reilly, who was in pursuit of a fourth All-Ireland medal. They have the experience there, Galway, allied with a sprinkling of young talent that are just so fearless.
Yeah, and again, it was great to see the likes of O'Reilly getting back onto the scoreboard, because in fairness, over the last number of years, she almost became a playmaker for the others, for her other teammates, maybe to take a bit more of that limelight and get more scores on the board. So it was great to kind of see her coming back in and getting those points on the board. It kind of goes to show how things can come in cycles sometimes with sport, right? Everything was kind of on about Dolan and Mallon, etc. But I, for me, as a former player, it was great to see the likes of Ailish coming back in and getting her name on the scoreboard. And having that leadership, I think, of being able to, you know, take a step back in the sense of setting up other people to actually going and taking your opportunities. I thought it was a really nice, as you said, kind of sprinkle of experience with a little bit of youth in there.
Yeah, before we chat about Cork, just a final word on Niamh Mallon. 1-2 in an All-Ireland semi-final and a remarkable story. Galway debut in last year's Camogie League final after lining out for her native Down for many years, where she used to commute from Galway since 2018. Are you surprised with the seamless transition for Niamh and her adopted county colours?
No, because to be honest, it was something that we would have always talked about for years. You know, seeing, I suppose, players that would be, you know, heads above most of their teammates on certain teams where you go, geez, you'd love to have them on your team. You know, you always have those conversations. And for me, you know, Mallon, how she was performing for the likes of Down, doing that commute, which I can only imagine that the torture on the body that would take. seeing her go from maybe Down, who would have been struggling at senior level, to being competitive at the intermediate level, stepping up into the likes of Galway, and in many ways taking over from a lot of outstanding camogie players in Galway, and being one of those, I suppose, main scorers, main playmakers, and probably one of their biggest open field threats. Does it surprise me? Absolutely not. There's plenty of players like Malin sprinkled out around the country who would absolutely make it in any of the top teams.
Now, Cork's 3-in-a-row bid continues as they came from behind to defeat Waterford 121-111. Substitute Orla Mullins' goal and 2 points in injury time providing a final flourish for Cork, who were trailing at half time, but ultimately were Cork as dominant as the final scoreline suggests?
It's one of those ones, listen, when you were there and you were watching it, and it was interesting to see the difference between the first game and the second game. Like, the pace that there was in that second game in Waterford and Cork, I think, was a slight difference to that first game. I think what Waterford brought was a complete dogged, workmanlike approach to the game. And I think you could see it, even in the trajectory of the scores, you know, Waterford really struggled in that last quarter. That Q4 on Saturday evening, whereas Cork were excelling. You know, two teams were going at different directions. And I think it just showed just the effort that Waterford had to put in order to, one, be at that stage at halftime, and two, still be kind of thereabouts with 15 minutes to go. But it was just they completely and utterly, in fairness, ran themselves into the ground or worked themselves into the ground. And to me, it just kind of shows, and I think we spoke about it last week as well, just that bench coming in off of Cork and how, if anything, they're nearly stronger finishing the game than they are starting it.
Who stood out in particular from a Cork perspective?
It was interesting because the two halves were quite different in many ways. I actually would, and I know in fairness, and rightly so, Katrina Mackey getting a huge amount of the plaudits from the game. And in fairness, she kind of came in late to that starting 15, really showed a huge amount of leadership up there. But in particularly, I thought in the first half, the likes of Sorka McCartan, I thought the way she went about that game, she worked her socks off. She was right in front of us where I was sitting on Saturday, and she just tried to do absolutely everything she could to keep them in the game, keep that momentum up in their half. And I thought she really stood out. Another player that would have stood out for me, again, and I've mentioned her name already, but Pamela Mackey, you know, is there an actual better man marker than Pamela out there, especially over the last 15 plus years? To me, once again, she just went out, put the shackles on the likes of Rocket, tried on Carton, who for me was probably the best player, along with maybe Bray on the Waterford side. But once again, it was Pamela just sticking like glue, wrecking anybody's head who she went near. For me, she really, really stood out and probably was maybe a little bit of an unsung hero in that semi-final.
Given the doggedness of Waterford and the challenge they did pose Cork, how much will that stand to Cork now in the final?
I think they couldn't have got a better game. Like, they could not have had a better game on Saturday evening going into an All-Ireland final, where in the championship they have not been tested, right? And that's no disrespect to any of the teams that they've come up against, but they have not been tested. I think you could really see that in the first half. Waterford drew absolutely everything at them, and it took them a while to figure it out. And I would say if you were Manly or any of the backroom team, you'd go, geez, we could not have wished for a better test and a better semi-final going into that final. Because even there was a little bit of shakiness at time defensively. Centre field was pretty much, they weren't really in the game because Waterford weren't allowing it, how they were playing. So to me, I think couldn't have been a better semi-final for Cork.
Is this the final pairing you expected at the start of the championship?
It is, and I suppose it just follows that trend, right? You know, even if you look at Leona Trinity Trees, who were the two teams in the final, Cork and Galway. So it continues on that trend. It's who I would have expected, would I have loved or wished for the game of Camogie that it wouldn't have been Cork and Galway. I probably would have. I kind of gave Tip a little bit of a shout last week, thinking that they might be able to bring something to the semi-final. To me, it's just kind of a little bit of a worrying trend where it's still Cork and Galway in that final. And I think you could see how both games finished as well, where Tipperary started to fall off in those last 10-15 minutes. So did Waterford. I think if anything, just the energy that it took those other teams to try and get up to the top of the mountain where Cork and Galway are was a little bit telling.
Okay, we will be previewing the final in detail next week. Cork against Galway, Sunday, August 10th, 5:15, throwing at Croke Park. And I do have to give this a plug, Aoife. For any Camogie fans coming up to Dublin, making a weekend of it, Saturday, August 9th, 11 a.m, you're bringing 9 All-Ireland titles, 7 All-Stars, and a lifetime of Camogie stories to a Legends Tour the day before.
Oh, God, yeah, I know. They must be stuck. They must be stuck to have me there. Look, it should be a bit of fun. It'll be a bit of fun. I'll make up a few stories as well, just to make it a little bit more interesting. But look, they absolutely must be stuck to have me there.
Great stuff. You can log on to crowpark.ie for more details on how to purchase a ticket for that. For now, Aoife Murray, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Game on.
Camogie.
Game on.
Association football.
Now, Keith Tracy, we're into the final minute of the Champions League qualifier in Baku. It is still Carabag 1, Shelburne 0. Will that be seen as a... Now, I know I caveat this with that Carabag, if they wanted to step up gear, they probably could have, but will that be seen as a successful result for Shelburne in the grand scheme of things?
I think so, yeah. I think if you were to flip this on his head and it was the force leg, I think Joey O'Brien reluctantly would probably take a 1-0 defeat away from home if, you know, they had the caveat of the second leg at home.
Daniel Kelly...
Yeah.
Has almost equalised with what is effectively going to be the last kick of the game, and perhaps it is the last kick of the game here. A long ball over the top by either James Norris or Sam Bone, and it's been whipped in, and Daniel Kelly volleys it again in the box, similar to Kerr McEnroy, outside the 6 yard, and he skies it.
It just goes to show you, Shelburne, the full time whistle is just gone, but it's the left back bombing down the left wing. He crosses it in, and the right back Kelly fires it over the bar. Quite similar to Harry Wood, had a chance like that in the first half, but missed the ball completely. So look, a 1-0 defeat away from home to Baku in the heat. It's a very, very difficult place to go against a really decent team. So I don't think it's a bad result, but 4-0 overall, they probably just coursing the luck that they didn't get onto the score sheet at some point, Shelburne. But as we say, bigger days to come for them.
Yeah, interestingly as well, so Shelburne will now play the loser of the Ludogorets Rijeka tie, and that one was nil-all ahead of the second leg in Bulgaria, and it is currently Ludogorets 1, Rijeka 0. 23 minutes played in that one, a penalty for Ludogorets. So as it stands, Shelburne will be playing Rijeka next Wednesday evening, and then a home tie in Talla Stadium, provisionally set for the following Tuesday night, with Rovers set to play on the Thursday. Speaking of Shamrock Rovers, keep 4-0 up from their first leg in Gibraltar against St. Joseph. Even if Stephen Bradley makes a couple of changes, you would still imagine Rovers get another victory, never mind progressing.
Yeah, I imagine Stephen Bradley may just make a couple of changes. I listened to his interview after the game, and basically he said, look, St. Joseph's had a go, they ran around, the Astro pitch in Gibraltar wasn't really of the standard that Shamrock Rovers would be used to, but after the first 45 minutes, the Rovers players started to get a grip on the conditions, started to move the ball an awful lot better, and once they scored the first goal, you sort of knew there was going to be a little bit of a domino effect. And yeah, to win the first leg is brilliant away from home, 4-0, effectively kills the tie, and with the strength of squad that Shamrock Rovers have. I mean, it's just a flip. You, Shelburne, will be looking at that Carabag team thinking they look so, so comfortable at this level. There'll be an awful lot of teams around Europe looking at Shamrock Rovers thinking they look really comfortable at this level. So it's absolutely brilliant that we can say these things, because it's not so long ago that we're looking at Shamrock Rovers. And even now, for the majority of the League of Ireland teams, we look and think any win in Europe is a brilliant win. But it's getting to the point now where we can nitpick with Shamrock Rovers, and we expect them to win. We're expecting them to get through ties, and I expect Shamrock Rovers to quite comfortably get through that tie, which is probably an obvious thing to say given they're 4-0 up.
No, but sometimes you have to state the obvious as well, yeah. Keith Tracy. Okay, we previewed the Galway play, today's feature at the Galway races, a little bit earlier with Don McLean. Let's hear how that one finished.
Jazzy Matty's come quickly under pressure, so too she could be anything, and they're whittling out quickly now. Up the hill they come, and it's Western Fold for the 2023 partnership of Danny Gilligan and Gordon Elliott. Towards the inside is Am I Right? Jesse Evans deserves his day. Is today it as they turn towards home, and it's Western Fold who still has a little left to offer. Jesse Evans is trying oh so hard on the near side. He might just switch in. She could be anything, stays on again on the far side. Western Fold with the battling Jesse Evans on the far side, but Western Fold might just have his measure in the closing stages. Oh, heartbreak for Jesse Evans again. He's put in so much, but it's Western Fold, the Mayo National winner, steps up at Galway to win the Tote Galway plate. It's Western Fold for Danny Gilligan again. Gordon Elliott lifts it from Jessie Evans, who's brave again. She Could Be Anything was third. Am I Right, Sea Music and Zana here with Buddy One, Three Card Brag. And then came the company sergeant, Ashdale, Bob Duffel, Coke, Jazzy, Matty, Sinisa. Then Chemical Energy, Gaelic Ark, and they were chased in.
So Western Fold wins the Galway Plate for Gordon Elliott. Don McLean, the favourite, nowhere to be seen.
No, it was a great race, Shane. Serious performance by Western Fold. Yeah, Nürburgring, he just never really travelled. He was being niggled along early enough by JJ Slevin, and he dropped to the rear of the field down memory lane. Similarly, just couldn't get into the race. But Western Fold, down memory lane, stable companion trained by Gordon Elliott too, was always up handy, Am I Right set. But looked like a good pace. They settled in behind him. Jazzy Matty ran well. He was matching strides at Western Fold in behind, Am I Right? But Danny Gillingham and Western Fold, he just bided his time. And those two fences in the dip, he took him out towards the outside of Am I Right? And he jumped the two fences well. And he came away up the hill. You heard there in the commentary that Jesse Evans came at him. Jesse Evans, he's such a stalwart of Galway. He's finished second in two Galway hurdles. And now he's second in a Galway Plate as well. He's actually entered in the Galway Hurdle tomorrow, so it remains to be seen if he takes a chance in that. He ran a massive race to get as close as he got to Western Fold, but Western Fold, Shane, he's a young horse on the up. He won the Mayo National at Ballinrobe a few weeks ago off a mark of 138. He's £10 higher today, and it was a fair hike from the handicapper up in grade, up into a better race, up into a Galway Plate, but he made light of it. And Danny Gilligan, super ride by him. He's won the Galway Plate before as well a couple of years ago. Local man, brilliant for him to go and win it again.
Okay, you mentioned the Galway Hurdle there tomorrow. Tomorrow's a feature race. So what catches your eye? What should we be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, it's a wide open race. Again, Shane, as we know, it's a really valuable race. I suppose Nadawi is in there. He's probably second or third favourite, Gordon Elliott's horse. So it would be serious for the same trainer to win the Plate and the Hurdle. But he's got a big chance. Nadawi finished second in the Galway Hurdle last year, just as a four-year-old. He's a lot higher in the handicap now than he was then, but he comes into the race in good form as well, and I'm sure Gordon Elliott has had this race in mind for him for a little while. So, yeah, maybe he could be one who could go well.
Just before I let you go, Don, has it been a largely successful Galway races today? Big crowds?
Yeah, big crowds, Shane. There was a little bit of rain earlier on, which is never a good thing here. But no, there's a great atmosphere, and crowds in the first 2 days have been good as well. They've been up despite kind of mixed weather, which is, I suppose, what we come to expect from Galway. But no, great atmosphere around and good buzz. They were packed deep around the parade ring to see the horses for the Galway Plate, and they packed deep around the winner's enclosure to welcome Western Fold back in.
Okay, great stuff, Don. We'll check back in with you tomorrow. As we mentioned, the Galway Hurdle, the feature race tomorrow at the ongoing festival out west. Just to update you as well with the third and final Euro Hockey Championships 2 pool match for the Irish men's hockey team. It was 5-0 at halftime into the third quarter, and it is now Ireland 6, Portugal 0. Just before we go, Keith Tracy, we're talking about the League of Ireland clubs in Europe, and hopefully it is a successful night for Athlone Town and the Women's Champions League qualifier against Cardiff City this evening. Shells beaten 1-0 earlier. Pats and Shamrock Rovers in European action tomorrow as well. How important is it for the European teams, or how difficult will it be for them to reset now ahead of the weekend? Shells away to Sligo, Rovers at home to Derry, and Pats away to Waterford.
It can be difficult. It can be really difficult. I remember I had to go to, I was either in Luxembourg or I was in Belarus, and we, in between that game, we had Sligo away, and I remember Liam Buckley reading out the team sheet of who was starting, and all the Ger O'Brien wasn't starting, Brendan Clark wasn't starting, Ian Birmingham was on the bench, and it got to the midfield and Keith Tracy was starting, and you want to see my bottom lip fall out. I was thinking, Liam, why am I playing? I just played in Europe. And you get it into your head that you can't do these type of things. It's really difficult. Look, Baku away for the Shelbourne lads, Carabag in Baku away. Yeah. It's a really, really difficult one in the heat, but they've got to get up for it again. The Sligo game is a massive, massive game, and I'm sure Joey O'Brien won't let Shelbourne sleepwalk into that game. He will crack the whip and make sure they're absolutely ready for it. So it can be difficult, but you've got to be professional.
Okay, great insight. Keith Tracy, thank you so much for your company this evening. Big thanks to Adrian Eames, who produced this evening's show. Laura Lee Davis was our broadcast coordinator. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. I shall speak to you then. The new music show with Better De Silva is up next, but first we're going to check in with the news desk.